This is Church Alive's Teaching of the Week by Pastor Gene Amoson. For additional teachings or information about the church, go to churchalive.net.
Are we ready to get into the Word today? Good deal. I want to start out by asking you a question. Have you ever put together maybe a piece of furniture, you know, you had to unbox it and it came with a ton of screws and that stupid Allen wrench that they give you? An Allen wrench. But there's been times whenever I've put together something like that and I'm like way into it, but I realized that a number of steps back I did something wrong. And so I've got the option to undo what I've done and go back there, or either think to myself, it's going to be all right. We're going to make it work. Y'all been there before? Like, yeah, it'll be fine. And then whenever you get done with it, it ain't fine. You know, either it wobbles or it looks wrong or the drawer doesn't pull out the way it's supposed to or something like that. I mean, come on, has somebody ever done that before? Turns out that way because we didn't follow the instructions. You know, our life isn't going to turn out the way it's supposed to if we don't follow His instructions. We can make a mess of our life if we're not doing what the Lord tells us to do. And His instructions are obviously in His Word, correct? Today I'm calling my teaching a swine mess. And we're going to be in Mark chapter 5 today. And if you got your Word, you can go ahead and turn there. I want to tell you a little bit about Mark's gospel before we hop into it, just kind of give you some background. Mark is actually John Mark. You'll see him referred to as John Mark later in the New Testament. Mark was not one of the disciples. Sometimes people think that the Gospels were all written by disciples. Just Matthew and John were disciples of Jesus. But John Mark, or Mark, was actually a cousin of Barnabas. Now, maybe you've heard of Paul and Barnabas, right, in the New Testament. They did ministry together. And there was a time, actually, whenever Barnabas, Paul, and John Mark all went out to do a ministry trip, but John Mark ended up kind of chickening out and wanted to go to the house. And so we see in Acts 15 that they go to do another ministry trip, and Paul basically says, I'm not going if John Mark's going. And Barnabas, being his cousin, said, look, man, we're going to go minister, so maybe we just need to go our separate ways. Basically, that's it in a nutshell. So we see that John Mark and Barnabas went to minister. Paul goes to minister. They just separate. But for the record, Paul and John Mark didn't end up having beef down the road. As a matter of fact, Paul says later in the New Testament, John Mark has been very valuable and done great things for the kingdom. And so, you know, they ended up kind of making up and kissing and hugging or whatever it was that they did. But all that to say, John Mark's gospel is great because some people call it the businessman's gospel. You'll read like this sense of urgency in it. He goes from one thing to the next. Based on your translation, he says the word immediately a lot. It's believed that what we're reading in John Mark's gospel is actually Peter's account of his time with Jesus. And so he's writing what Peter said that he experienced while being with Jesus. So let's go to verse 1 of Mark 5. And it says this. It says, so they arrived at the other side of the lake in the country of the Gadarenes. When Jesus climbed out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out from the tombs to meet him. The man lived in the burial caves and could no longer be restrained, even with a chain. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as he often was, he snapped the chains from his wrist and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night he wandered among the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. When Jesus was still some distance away, the man saw him, ran to meet him, and bowed low before him. With a shriek, he screamed, why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had already said to the spirit, come out of the man, you evil spirit. Let me just kind of set you up to where we're at this point. Jesus, in the previous chapter, chapter 4, was on the other side of the lake. He tells the disciples, come, let's go to the other side of the lake. They get into the boat. They're, you know, somewhere on their journey to the other side. While they're in the boat, a storm kicks up. Y'all remember this, right? Jesus spoke peace to the storm. It actually says Jesus rebuked the storm. Which means that obviously the enemy was in that storm trying to prevent Jesus from getting to the other side if he had to rebuke it. So he shows up to shore, and this dude immediately runs to him. Verse 9, then Jesus demanded, so he's speaking to the spirit, what is your name? And he replied, my name is Legion, because there are many of us inside this man. A Roman legion, by the way, was 3,000 to 6,000 soldiers. So this guy had a minimum of 3,000 demons inside of him. Verse 11, there happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. Send us into the pigs, the spirits begged. Let us enter them. So Jesus gave them permission. The evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs. And the entire herd of about 2,000 pigs plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned in the water. The herdsmen fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons. He was sitting there fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what had happened told the others about the demon-possessed man and the pigs, and the crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. I absolutely love this story. It's powerful, but it's also sad at the same time. I've taught on this guy before in the past, but today I want us to focus on what took place after his deliverance. You notice that this guy has been set free. Yet the people ask Jesus to leave. They ask him to leave. I mean, this is the sickest guy in their town, right? He's the guy that has a minimum 3,000 demons in him. He runs around naked. He's a cutter, obviously. He's completely out of his mind, we could say this. He's the guy that you would tell your children, don't go anywhere near this guy, right? I think we would all do that as parents. So this guy is sitting there clothed in his right mind, and the people want Jesus to leave. Does that seem strange to anybody else? They want Jesus to leave. There's a lot to look at in this chapter, but something that stands out to me, and I don't know if it stood out to you, is the fact that there were 2,000 pigs in this story. Why is it that there were 2,000 pigs there? Maybe you haven't thought about that. And again, I'm going to give you a lot of background today. First of all, this area, as we read there around verse 1, was called Gadara. And this was an area inhabited by the tribe of Manasseh. Whenever the Lord brought the children of Israel out of captivity from Egypt, and he takes them to the promised land, the land is broken up between the different tribes of Israel, and Manasseh was one of those tribes. This was the portion of land that they got. They had land on the east and the west side of the Jordan River. Whenever they came into this territory, there were people that were there who were called the Girgashites. And this is Hebrew territory, okay? So the Lord gives this territory to Manasseh, and this is Hebrew territory. So honestly, pigs should not have been on the menu in this area around this territory. Does that make sense? Because again, it was Hebrew territory. Jews were forbidden from eating pork, okay? And the Mosaic law, and again, this is law that the Lord gave Moses between Egypt and the Promised Land. The Lord, of course, gave them laws that they had to live by. But in the law, the Lord talked about some clean animals and some unclean animals. Clean animals were those that you could basically raise, that you could eat. And then you had unclean animals, which you were supposed to stay away from and not supposed to eat. To give you some examples, and there is a huge list in the Old Testament that you can read. Some examples, like clean animals would have been like goats, cattle, sheep. Unclean animals would have been like a camel, of course, pigs. And I'm just going to say it for all you cat lovers, cats were unclean. And listen, I know you're thinking, Pastor Gene, they're very clean animals. Not according to God. Dogs were unclean too, so don't get too upset with me. And obviously you wouldn't want to eat a cat or a dog anyway, right? But you weren't supposed to raise or partake of these unclean animals. And so Leviticus actually shows us that if they were to touch a pig, that they had to be ceremonially cleansed, which was a bit of a pain to go through that process. But if this is Hebrew territory, why do we have all these pigs? 2,000 of them around. A little bit more background for you. Whenever the children of Israel, whenever the tribe of Manasseh, they come to occupy the land, it was moving ready for them. It was moving ready for them. And the Lord simply told Joshua, simply told each of the tribes, he said, listen, there's going to be people there whenever you get there, but all you have to do is just drive them out. They'll go. You just have to drive them out. You're going to be victorious if you do it. He also said this. He said, don't socialize with them. Don't let your children marry into them either. Because this is what the Lord said. If your children start to marry into those folks, what they will do is they will turn the hearts of your children to where they will begin to worship other gods. The Lord knew what was, you know, I mean, he knew what would happen. And so all they had to do was just drive them out. That was the instructions that the Lord gave them. But whenever we go to Joshua 17, we see that they didn't drive them all out. They didn't do it. They weren't obedient. They didn't follow his instructions. They had a word from God, but they still didn't do what they were supposed to. And the first thing I want us to think about today is this, is that obedience is required. I need somebody to say required. Required. For God's blessing and for victory in our lives. We can't expect the full blessings of God. We can't expect to walk in victory in our lives if we're not being obedient to his instructions for us. You hear me? And whenever God gives us instructions in his word, you'll never see like a sentence end with, if you'd like to, right? He doesn't say that. Like the Ten Commandments, you know, thou shalt not steal unless you just really want to. I mean, he doesn't say that. He's very clear about what we should and shouldn't do. He doesn't start, you know, his commands with, it would be ideal if you. He doesn't word things that way either. He's very straight and to the point, correct? And whenever we do what he says, then we're going to see victory and we're going to see blessing in our life. Yeah. So God told the children of Israel, speaking to the tribe of Manasseh, he said this, he said, go in and drive them out. Don't let your kids marry their kids. But apparently they just felt like it would be okay. Maybe, and again, I'm just thinking here. Maybe you've got the young men who had just come out of the wilderness. They had just occupied the land. They've been seeing the same people for years. Maybe these young men are like, you know, these are pretty girls. Can we get real? These are pretty girls. And then they were probably thinking, you know, they are nice. Do we really have to drive them out? I mean, they're nice folks. And then maybe they had this thought. You know what? The Lord was thinking that they would turn us to worship their gods, but listen, we can witness to them and turn them to where they're worshiping the one true God. Yeah. Teenagers, we use this term missionary dating sometime, where you just tell your parents, it's all right, I'm going to lead them to the Lord. And your parents are like, that's not the way it's going to work out, right? They probably thought, listen, we can turn them to where they're worshiping our God. And they're probably thinking, what would it hurt? And so rather than obeying the instructions of God, they compromise, they gave in, and the Girgashites still lived among them. So they don't drive them out. And I think over time, you've probably got the men who married the Girgashite women, which we know happened. Maybe these ladies are cooking, and the men are thinking, you ladies know how to cook. You know, in the same way, like, we got a lot of folks like with some Cajun blood in them around here, and y'all can cook. Let me go ahead and just tell you. And they were probably thinking like, my word, what is this? This is so good. What am I eating right now? And the Girgashite lady was probably like, it's bacon. And this guy was probably like, well, praise the Lord for bacon. Where does it come from? Pigs. And then there was an oh crud moment that guy just had. Now, can we all just pause and just thank the Lord for the new covenant, which allows all of us to eat bacon and ribs? Can we just give God some praise today? I love bacon. I don't know. Bacon makes everything better, doesn't it? Or vanilla ice cream if it's a dessert. But those two things make everything better. But here, let's think about this just for a minute. Before they knew it, they were eating things that they had been forbidden to eat. The Lord said, don't touch what comes from an unclean animal. You know, I've noticed that small compromises often have long consequences. long consequences. The people knew it was wrong, but it's what the Girgashites did. And rather than be obedient to God, they apparently just felt like, it'll be all right. Kind of like with our furniture example. It'll be all right. But we see years down the road, it was not all right. It wasn't all right. And they ultimately end up just living just like the Girgashites. Some of us have compromised as believers. We've started to think, well, it's okay if I do this. And once we start to compromise, then it's easier to do it more and more and more and more. I mean, can we just think about these people right here that we've been reading about? They didn't do what the Lord said as far as driving them out. That was the first place where they were disobedient. And then the Lord said, don't marry. Well, they didn't do what the Lord said here, so then they didn't do what the Lord said again. They married into them. And then all of a sudden, they're eating the things that they're not supposed to. They just kept compromising and kept being disobedient. And they totally get to the place to where they don't look anything like the children of God. They just don't. And so over time, these people who God delivered out of Egypt, they're not just eating pigs, y'all. They are raising pigs. They are in the pig business. They're selling them. And that's the reason they were upset whenever their pigs ran and ended up drowning. That's the reason they were upset. Much of their lives were now centered around something that God told them to completely stay away from. A little sad, isn't it? It's sad. And that's actually the reason that the demons asked Jesus, hey, can we be sent into the swine? That was why they were begging to be sent into the swine. They knew what Jesus was capable of. They knew how he could take that area of Gadara and turn it upside down. Come on, somebody, because wherever Jesus is, I mean, things change, right? They knew what he was capable of, but they did not want the people to accept Jesus. So if he sends us to the pigs, we can make them upset with Jesus. But Jesus knew exactly what he was doing because he sent the pigs for a swim. They didn't quite survive, but he sent them for a swim, and ultimately he was getting rid of what was ultimately a slap in his father's face. Right. Their value system was just so messed up. But let me tell you something. What's really sad about this whole story to me is the fact that these Jewish folks, it's not that they lost their pigs. I don't care about that. What's sad is the fact that they missed an encounter with the very Messiah them and their ancestors had been waiting on. You see, it was their ancestors that came through the desert, through the wilderness, that saw the Red Sea split, that saw water come out of a rock. It was them and their ancestors who had read what the prophets spoke about the coming Messiah and what he would do. He was there on the scene, doing what they said that he would do. Come on, setting the captives free, I think we read about, right? He's setting them free, and they completely missed it. And not only that, they said, we want you to leave this place now. I mean, that's heavy. Can we agree? Like, that is heavy that they would ask him to do that. And the people were concerned about their livelihood because so much of it apparently, was based around the pigs. Whenever Jesus was their provision, whenever Jesus could bring purpose to their life, whenever Jesus could bring salvation and deliverance to them in the same way that he had just done with a guy who was full of demons, he was the guy that could bring healing in their life, but they still said, we need you to leave. We need you to leave. Now, I got a question for you today. Do you have any pigs in your life? And whenever I say that, is there anything that's gotten between you and the Lord that needs to go? Something that makes you look more like the world and less like Jesus because it's part of your life. And let me just kind of throw a few things at you of what we could be talking about today. Maybe it's a job that is absolutely consuming you. You know, there's times that people, they get a job and it is a 24/7 job. And so it affects their marriage. It affects their relationship with their kids. It affects them to where they are not spending any time with the Lord. And the paycheck may be really, 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 really good, but in the end, there's other issues that they're having with their family, right? I mean, come on, somebody. Like, whenever it's affecting your home life, it's not a good thing, correct? Maybe it's a job. Maybe it's just an acquaintance you have who has just become a negative influence in your life. And you're finding that whenever you're with them, you act different than you do at home. And you're just thinking to yourself, you know, that this person's great. But whenever you really look at the situation, they're negatively affecting you. Maybe you're in a relationship right now that you have no business being in. Maybe you just are desiring to be with somebody and you know it's just not right. But you've just been lonely, but it's ultimately gotten between you and God. Or maybe it's just something that you've kind of got hooked on. A hobby that you've gone all in with and you're spending so much time with it. It could be social media, right? To where we're just glued to a screen. It could be gaming. It could be, you know, getting on websites that we shouldn't get on. Do you have anything in your life that's become like a herd of pigs that's gotten between you and God? Now, I ask that because I want you to know God wants those pigs in our life gone. He wants them gone. And sometimes we may not see them as a problem, but he sees that they're a problem. And I need you to understand, one of the names of God is literally jealous. He is a jealous God, and anything between us and him, he wants gone. Come on, somebody. He wants gone. And so maybe you're here today, and you've just kind of experienced a big change in your life. Like maybe it was a breakup. Maybe you lost your job. And you're trying to figure it out. You're trying to wrap your head around it. You're having these, how in the world could this have ever happened thoughts. Can I go ahead and just tell you, it could be that the Lord just dealt with your pigs. And you probably should put a smile on your face, because let me tell you something. If he dealt with your pigs, they needed to go. Your life's only going to start to improve, somebody. He may have just dealt with your pigs. If there was a relationship that wasn't right for you and he just kind of ended that, if it was a job that wasn't right for you and he ended that, and you may have had loved ones who were praying for you to get you out of that situation. I want you to understand, he's got a plan for you. And if you've allowed some pigs to get in between you and him and he's taken them out, it's because he cares for you. It's because he wants the best for you, and it's in his grace that he removed them from your life. Hear me, it's his grace. So if that's happened to you recently, and maybe you're still in this place of like, I don't know what to think. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this. And maybe you just feel slightly devastated. If that's you, or if something like that happens to you, maybe life is great, but then something just hits you hard. Maybe next week, next year, we don't know whenever it is. How are we going to respond? What's our response going to be? It's very often that believers will respond with pride. And whenever I say this, this is what they say. I didn't deserve that. That's pride speaking. You hear me? That's pride speaking. Look at what 1 Peter 5 says. It says, God opposes the proud, but he gives grace. Somebody say grace. Grace. To what? To the humble. God gives grace to the humble. Peter says, so humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time, he will lift you up in honor. He'll lift you up in honor. So will you respond like these people and tell Jesus whenever you're hard seasons hit and say, you know what, I'm just done? Or are you going to humble yourself knowing that he wants the best for you, knowing that he will lift you up the way that scripture says? Because that's what will happen whenever we humble ourselves. I've noticed that I can try to make things happen in my life, but whenever I just back off and let him do what he does best, life turns out so much better. Have y'all ever noticed that before? His ways, again, are higher than our ways. And so we need to just let him do what he does in our life. And so if you're here today and you feel like truly your pigs have drowned, as in you've had this big change happen abruptly in your life, I want to encourage you to just stick with Jesus. Now, I know that sounds so basic. And you may be like, well, absolutely. Can I tell you, sometimes people don't always stick with Jesus, believers that have maybe even known him for years whenever hard times hit. A lot of times our response changes. And here's what happens. The enemy gets into our ear. And then all of a sudden the enemy starts accusing God. And so what we'll do if we don't watch it is we'll start saying things like, well, God, if you're a good God, why would you have allowed that to happen to me? That's the enemy getting in your ear. Hear me. hear me, he loves you, he wants the best for you. In the hardest of seasons, we need to guard our heart and we need to always celebrate his goodness and refuse to ever accuse him. Our God is only good. He cannot change. He's, come on, somebody say he's good. He's so good and he will not change. If you don't know that, I want you to know he only does good and he loves you so much. And so whenever you're in those seasons where you can't quite figure out what's happening, you can't understand why, you can't put your finger on it, hear me, trust him. Trust him because he loves you. And I want to share some scripture with you today whenever it comes to those seasons that you may walk through. Isaiah 55 says this in verse 8, "My thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts are higher than your thoughts." I need you to hear me today. Sometimes we think that we've got it all figured out. We know what we need. We know what's best, but the Lord sees way down the road. Hear me, the Lord sees way down the road. So for instance, many of y'all today, you're going to leave this place and you're going to take a left going towards Smith County. As soon as you get out here, you're going to go a little ways and you're going to be able to see like down the hill, right? Whenever it kind of bottoms out. So you can see for, I don't know, a mile-ish or something like that in front of you. But do you know the Lord knows what's happening at the corner of 28 and 35 down in Mize? He knows what's happening in Taylorsville, and so he sees so far down the road, and so whenever he's working on our behalf, it's because he understands what's going to be happening in our life down the road. And too many times, we think we got it all figured out because we see kind of what's happening in the short term, and God's like, hey, let me take this. I know what I got for you way down the road, and it's good. It's good. Look at what Romans 8:28 says, ties into that, and we know that all things, somebody say all things. All things works together for what? The good. For the good. All things work together for the good of those who love God. How many of y'all love God today? Anybody love God in this place? He's working all things, the good, the bad, the ugly, for you. And he's turning it for good in your life to those who are called according to his purpose. John 10:10 says this, "The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy." We're going to stop right there just for a minute. It says the thief comes what? Only. Only to steal, kill, and destroy. It's his main objective. But then Jesus follows it up. He says, "But I came that you can have life." But you know what? I don't want you to have just this mediocre life. I want you to have like an incredible life that you love. A life full of abundance. And so it's whenever I mentioned a minute ago, whenever we start to accuse God, you see, that doesn't even line up with this scripture right here. It's the thief that comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Bad things will happen because we live in a fallen world, right? And so, for instance, you know, if you see that somebody got sick, it's not God, why did you put cancer on that person? God doesn't do that, right? Hear me, never give God credit for the things that Satan does. Because we see what his main objective is right here. We see what his main objective is right here. He makes life better is what Jesus does. Then Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans that I have for you." Maybe you're here today and you just feel like your life is straight chaos right now. Feel like you've gotten way off track. I want you to understand, he's telling you this. As his child, he's saying, "Listen, I still have plans for you. That never changed." He's telling you, "I've got these plans to prosper you." I'm talking spirit, soul, body, prosper you. I'm not going to harm you. He's telling you, "Listen, I want you to have hope. And I've got a future for you, a good future for you." And some of you, you need to rest in that today. He's not forgotten about you. He's not forgotten about you. He wants good things for you. He wants the best for you. So I want us to go back to Mark 5. The people asked Jesus, they said, "We want you to leave." Jesus wasn't welcome, so he said, "All right," he heads to the boat. The guy who he had delivered chases after him. Verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. But Jesus said, no, go home to your family. Tell them everything the Lord has done for you and how merciful he's been. So the man started off to visit the 10 towns, that's Decapolis, of that region, and began to proclaim the great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed at what he told them. You may not know this, but Jesus ultimately sent him out as his first missionary. He wanted to come with Jesus. Jesus said, no, I got a plan for you, Jack. I need you to go tell everybody what has just happened in your life. Your mess will become your message. Your mess will become your message. That was Jesus' plan for this guy, and it was a plan that he never knew was for his life. It became his message. Hear me today, if you've not followed his instructions, if you feel like your piece of furniture that you were building with those 80,000 screws and that Allen wrench, if it doesn't even resemble what the box looks like, hear me. He can fix you. He can make things right. That mess that you created, he can turn it into a message. A lot of times people don't realize the easiest way to share Jesus with somebody is just to simply say, this was me, this is where I was. And then I met Jesus. And here's where I am. This is where he brought me to. So no matter what your past has looked like, he wants to use that so that you can bring hope, so that you can help somebody experience the life that he has for them. You know, I love that Jesus went through a storm to deliver this guy. I mentioned earlier that in chapter 4, he told the disciples, he said, hey, let's go to the other side, right? And then they got in the boat and they had a storm, and Jesus was determined, we're getting through that. Jesus went all the way across, fought a storm just for this one guy. As a matter of fact, it talks about the fact that this guy cried out day and night. Hear me, Jesus responds to those who cry out to him. So no matter what you're walking through today, cry out to God. There's actually a word, you'll see it. This is not in my notes, but let me just share it with you. There's a word that you'll see in the King James Version in Hebrews, I believe. And it says, he will succor them. It's spelled S-U-C-C-O-U-R. Yeah. That word, I think it's used twice in the word, only in the King James Version. It means he will run to the voice of the one crying. In the Old Testament, whenever the children of Israel are in captivity, the Lord actually speaks and he says this. He says, your cries have come up, and I am coming down to you. Too many times we cry out to a bottle, we cry out to a counselor, we cry out on social media telling about how bad our situation is. We cry out, but we never shift our cry to go up. Whenever we start to cry up to God, hear me, just like what we said a second ago, whenever he hears you cry up, he will come down to you. He's so concerned about every detail of your life. Maybe your past has been rough. Maybe you've gotten off track. Listen, he's ready to put things back together in your life. He's ready to make things right in your life. Don't let the enemy hammer you with condemnation. Jesus didn't condemn this guy, and he's not condemning you either. Learn from the past, move forward, and use it to bring hope into the life of somebody else.
Thank you for listening to the Church Alive Teaching of the Week with Pastor Gene Amoson. We invite you to join us for our Sunday morning worship service every Sunday at 8:45 or 10:30. Learn more at churchalive.net.